It's time!
Happy New Month! The Eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's out!
He has done it!
He's done it!
It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Namajunas is trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of faith!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Welcome back to Pound for Pound. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, and I am here with Mahdi Dembele. We are finally back in studio, and I cannot be happier to finally get into combat sports talk. I mean, it's been a bit of a lull for the past couple weeks, but we finally got something from fight announcements to a big pay-per-view going down tomorrow. I cannot wait to talk about it. But Mahdi, how are you doing?
I mean, I'm just so glad to be in the studio again. It's looking like Winter Wonderland outside. I'm not the biggest fan, but always good talking MMA with my good friend Andrew Canary, Zach Cordova behind the boards. I just love the MMA spirit around here. I'm ready to get it rocking. I'm ready to get it rolling. And I'm glad to be back, Andrew.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm definitely glad to be back as well. Huge shout out to our producer for this week, Zach Cordova. We were talking to him before this episode, giving us some good takes, killing it behind the sticks. But without further ado, I think we should just get into some of these fight announcements because it's pretty crazy, honestly, what Dana has been doing over kind of our winter break. UFC 300 is just getting better and better. Let me just list off some of these fight announcements. We can get into it. For UFC 300, we now have Bobby Green versus Jim Miller. Jim Miller most recently got a submission win in the last UFC fight night. Very impressive performance. I believe now he has something like 43 maybe fights in the UFC. It's crazy.
And I believe the most wins, if I'm not mistaken, at 26 or 27, if I'm
exactly,
not mistaken.
Exactly, yeah. He overcame, I believe, Cowboy Cerrone back in Vegas. Like, it might have been over the summer to actually take that title from him.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just keeps building upon that. And he has another opportunity at UFC 300 against Bobby Green, who is a real tough fight. It should be a fun fight. So what are your just general takes on this so far?
I mean, absolutely fun fight. Again, we talked about Jim Miller, the most fights in the UFC, most wins in the UFC, with impressive wins against guys like Cowboy Cerrone, who everybody loves, if you're not Stephen A. Smith, but who everybody loves. Bobby Green and himself in his own right, right? Ever since that tangent, I want my money. He's pulled off, I believe it was a 3-4 fight win streak before he just lost his most recent fight. But Bobby Green, high volume striker, Jim Miller, as tough as they come, it's going to be a really, really good fight. You know what? I'm not going to make any picks. Just say it's a really good fight. I'm leaning towards a guy, but I'm really excited for that one. That's one of the few fights that that catch my eye in particular.
Got you.
All
so
these great fights.
I won't twist your hand and force you to make a pick then. but I will ask you this question. Do you think it's going to predominantly take place on the feet or more so in kind of like the grappling ground game?
I think it's going to be an effort on the feet. I think there's going to be a lot of dynamic striking involved. I think, again, Bobby Green, if he was a boxer, he'd be like a high-level boxer with a high work rate, just throws a lot of punches. He'll pick you apart. Maybe not have a knockout strike punch, but he'll pick you apart. And Jim Miller, pretty much the same. I mean, it's on the tip of my tongue. I want to say, I'm looking at
you can make an early prediction. Just say, come on.
Jim Miller. I got to go with Jim Miller. I think he extends on the lead. Bobby Green, I mean, finding like this kind of like luck this late in your career. I believe Bobby Green's 36, 37. But Jim Miller, I feel like he's playing with house money in this fight. I just think it's his fight to lose.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's definitely like a coming out party for Jim Miller. But I will say, I think where this fight takes place is, kind of will pave the way to who wins the fight. Because, like you said, Bobby Green, really, really good boxer and really, just able to not or has the ability to avoid absorbing a ton of damage while dishing out, kind of those pitter-patter strikes that mount up onto opponent. And somebody like Jim Miller, who does have kind of a tried and true chin, he'll definitely be able to take those shots.
Yeah.
But somebody that's a bit older in age, I mean, it's kind of a known fact that as you get older in the sport, you wear damage a whole lot more, which could play a lot into this fight. I mean, just look at Michael Bisping at the beginning of his career. He used to eat big shots and looked pristine, but at the end of his career, he'd take one big shot from Dan Henderson and his face would swell up like a balloon. So I don't know. I mean, it could play a factor in this fight. I'm also leaning towards Jim Miller in this one. I'm a big Jim Miller fan considering all his accolades and what he's done for the sport. But I think at the end of the day, it's just a real fun fight.
Absolutely. It's fireworks. You know, the thing about these cards, it's not necessarily the big names. And we were talking about this off camera. It's not necessarily the biggest of names, right? But they're not champions. This isn't the title. But it's just so much fun. It's like Fordham and mid-major basketball, right? Well, Fordham's not mid-major Division One, but it's the schools you don't expect that you get the really, really triple overtime games. Yes, Fordham, I'm talking about you versus George Washington. But it's games and fighters like that that make
this
sport fun.
Hey, don't disrespect the Rams.
Don't disrespect.
That's a D1 team right there.
That's a D1 basketball team. Who are you, Madi?
Well, moving on, though, we have some more UFC 300 fight announcements. The next one is a big one for me. I am extremely nervous. There's a lot of emotions in me going into this fight. But the fight is for the BMF belt, Justin Gaethje defending his aforementioned BMF belt against Max Holloway. I believe it is a lightweight division fight, so Max Holloway is going to be moving up 10 pounds to 155 pounds. It's going to be a 5-round fight. Oh, man, I'm so nervous.
I know. Listen, for anyone watching at home, Andrew Canary is the Max Holloway guy. I mean, we all love Holloway, Zach and I included, but Andrew Canary loves Max Holloway. I understand your fear. Justin Gaethje hits like a Mack truck. Even going back to last time when we talked about Poirier and Gaethje, I said Poirier doesn't win that fight twice in a row because it's just Gaethje. It's just one of those things. And Poirier's the better fighter overall, I would say, over Gaethje. But when you have an equalizer like that, I mean, it's really tough to pick a lot of guys over you. I love Holloway. He's one of the few, he's one in a line of slew of taller, like featherweights or whatever, and he's as good as they come. He's like the freshman that'll take your girlfriend. But for this one, I don't know. I don't know if he gets away with it. I'm a Gaethje guy. I like Max Holloway too. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's funny that you bring up the freshman that'll take your girl, because it definitely seems like, you know, considering the size and stature, Max Holloway is kind of a freshman heading into the 155-pound division, and Justin Gaethje definitely seems more of a senior, you know? He definitely seems like he's more built for the weight class. And I'm thinking to the last time that Max Holloway moved up 10 pounds and fought in lightweight, and that was against actually Dustin Poirier. And that fight did not go well for Max Holloway. He definitely had his moments, but he lost by, I believe, a 5-round decision. And it looked like the shots that he took from Dustin Poirier, while it didn't knock him down, those were, I think, by far some of the heaviest shots he ever took in his UFC career. I would say the only other one that came really close would be someone like Alexander Volkanovski in their third fight. But even then, it seemed like when Dustin Poirier landed against Max Holloway, he really rattled Holloway.
Yeah.
And I think Gaethje could possibly do the same.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Justin Gaethje, I mean, one of the hardest hitters in the lightweight division. I mean, again, I've been clamoring him to be a UFC champion, but a BMF belt doesn't hurt at all. I mean, I like Max Holloway. I think he's a really, really good fighter. Again, if it's kind of like one of those Kamaru Colby things. Well, Colby, I don't think Colby's the correct. But if Alexander Volkanovski did not exist, Max Holloway's the best ever, and there's no undisputing it, and he's the greatest. But Max Holloway, I mean, I'm not too – man –
it's a tough, I know, it's a real tough fight to kind of measure up, because looking at it very, you know, just at surface level, it seems like it could be one-way traffic either way. It seems like Max Holloway could really, you know, put the pressure on Justin Gaethje,
and
he could just kind of, you know, just pick him apart, and Gaethje might miss on a couple big swings, and that gas tank might be going low in the round, you know, third round, fourth round, leading to Max Holloway just dominating later in the fight. Or who knows, Gaethje could just hit him with a massive shot, massive shot early on. If he doesn't finish it right then, it could just cut him open, and then he's on the back foot, like we've seen in his other fights, where if he just gets hit with a big shot, Holloway, sometimes he's just not really able to find his way into the fight, and it's just always on the back foot and just losing round after round.
Which so, I don't want to see.
I know, I don't want to see it either, but either way, I think it will be a fun fight, and I am leaning towards Holloway. That is the utmost epitome of bias right there. Mm-hmm. Madi, I don't know if you have a very early pick. Also, Zach, I'll bring you in the mix too. If you have a very, very, very early pick, I know I'm twisting both of your guys' arms. If not, though, we can move on.
I do. I'm going to go with Gaethje.
Okay.
I love Max Holloway. I know you love Max Holloway. Holloway has to be perfect for an entire fight. Gaethje has to be perfect for 1 second. He has to hit him with one big shot. And I think Max is just going to crumble apart. And I don't know if he'll be able to come back after that one big shot. I got to go with Gaethje. He's holding the belt. I think it's his to
bring
in
tears to my eyes.
I'm sorry.
Zach, do you got any picks? Gotcha. So Zach just said that Gaethje is really hungry for that belt. Max Holloway has been a champion once before in his UFC career, so he thinks that Gaethje's just going to really want this fight more than Max Holloway, where Holloway will kind of view it more as like kind of a, you know, big fun fight, which honestly, that's a really good point, Zach. I didn't really think about that, especially considering where both guys are at in their career. Gaethje is somebody that's kind of, it seems like the door is closing quickly on him for him to really build his legacy as like
35.
A legitimate champion. And Max Holloway, I think, is now looking for those fun fights. He's not really worried about being the most competitive guy. Yeah, it's a good take, Zach. I like that one. That's a good one. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, right now it's 2-1 for Gaethje, so we'll see if that evens out. Maybe we'll get Riley in the mix. Maybe she'll vote for Holloway. Who knows? But moving on, though, the last fight for this UFC 300 kind of announcement pool is Charles Oliveira taking on Armin Saryukin. I could already see Zach pumping up his arms for this one. He is pumped. I cannot wait. Also, this should be a very, very fun fight. Saryukin is coming off of a massive knockout win over Beneil Dariush, and Charles Oliveira is always one of the most dangerous guys at lightweight. So, Mahdi, what are you thinking about this fight? Do you think, I mean, obviously this is like a real contender fight where we talked about, you know, those previous two fights are a bit more fun, entertainment value. This is a real kind of lot of stakes in this fight, lightweight division kind of big fight.
The chips are definitely on the table for this one. Andrew, I don't know if you remember, I picked Charles Oliveira to be Beneil Dariush. I'm a huge Charles Oliveira guy. I've heard the criticisms, well, he's almost losing all the fights that he's in, like the skin of his teeth, and then he magically comes out with the win. Charles Oliveira, I mean, just as a submission fighter, maybe the greatest of all time. Like, he's fantastic there. He has the it factor, and I absolutely love him. Other than that one fight against... Who did he lose to? It was Islam. Of course, yeah. Everybody loses to Islam. He lost to Islam. But other than that, he's been perfect. There's been no reason to pick against him. Variety is the spice of life when it comes to this guy. I mean, his bag of tricks is so deep. When he gets your back, I mean, he just hangs there. He, fantastic striker. Like, Charles Oliveira is amazing. Saryukin is not one to be played with, but I got to go with Charles Oliveira. I mean, there's been no reason for me to ever pick against him. No reason to ever pick against
Zach,
him.
Zach, you are nodding very incessantly on that. You seem very happy with Mahdi's pick. I don't think you'll be as happy with mine because I think I'm leaning more towards Saryukin, which is crazy.
The Armenian?
I know. I love Charles Oliveira. I think that he's a fantastic fighter. And I love how he's developed in the past couple of years to really, you know, be a submission threat while also being extremely versatile in terms of striking and just pushing the pace and staying in a fight despite getting dropped multiple times. I think he's one of the most interesting fighters in the lightweight division. But despite that, I think that Saryukin is a world beater, honestly. I think this guy is incredibly impressive. I mean, go back to Dariush fight where he landed a knee and then just put him out cold.
It
was crazy. It was insanity. And I mean, just looking at Saryukin's record, I mean, you could keep going down the list. His last fight before the Dariush fight, Joaquin Silva, TKO punches, won in round three. Demir Ismagulov, who was a guy that was really scary, and he beat him via unanimous decision. If you want to go back to his last loss against Matheus Gamrot, a lot of people didn't even think that he lost that fight. It was, I know it's a unanimous decision, but a lot of people did argue that the other way. And other than that, I mean, he's been pretty much perfect other than his other loss to Islam Makhachev, which, I mean, everyone loses
Islam
to Makhachev.
Everybody loses to Islam.
Exactly.
And he has wins like Matt Frivola in between. Like, yes, or you can – I mean, Oliveira – I have no reason to pick against Oliveira. Like, I just feel like there's no – I mean,
see,
one of the most creative guys that – fighting-wise –
I would agree with you, Mahdi. I would 100% agree with you that there wouldn't be anything for me to kind of like vote against Oliveira in this fight for, except for Armin's last fight. It was so impressive, and his one-punch power, like, he really displayed that in that fight. And I felt like, yeah, he was a good striker. He had some power, but it completely changed my view point of him after that Beneil Dariush fight. And it leads me to believe that I think that Saryukin could possibly get a moment in this Oliveira fight where he lands a big shot, drops Oliveira. And also on top of that, he's a great grappler, Saryukin is.
Yes.
So I don't think he'll be scared to jump into that guard once he drops Oliveira and possibly finish the fight. I mean, if you want to go back to Charles Oliveira as one of his kind of biggest losses against Paul Felder, it kind of happened in a similar way where Paul Felder landed a big shot against Oliveira and Oliveira stayed on the ground trying to fish for submissions. Paul Felder just was not scared at all of the submissions and just kept beating him up. I could see a lot of the same thing happening with the Saryukin Oliveira fight, but
that's a good point. And the reason why I won't argue with that argue with you on that is because I'm always the guy saying, like, Beneil Dariush, and you said this off camera, like, his career after that, I don't know where you go. He's looking like he may teeter out as well. Like, he's not what he could have once been. But I always say it's not just who you beat, it's how you beat them. It's the spectacular fact. It's the wow factor, right? It's fighting. We love to see you knocked out. I love the way that he broke the guard, went around the guard of Beneil Dariush and then hit him with the knee. Absolutely magnificent. I mean, that one fight by itself, it gives him a chance. I'm not mad at that at all.
Yeah. No, I mean, Zach, do we have any early picks for you in terms of this fight? I mean, I know it's probably 100% going to be Oliveira, but let me hear it. He said, come on, man, it's Charles. You know what it is. So there we go. I mean, we'll see what happens. I think that that is definitely one of the most competitive fights out of this 300 announcement. But, I mean, yeah, it should be really fun and big implications for what's going to happen in this lightweight division moving past this 300 card. But one more announcement I do want to talk about that Mahdi was particularly excited about.
Yeah, it's weird.
Benoit Saint-Denis taking on Dustin Poirier. Also, I mean, we're just getting a lot of lightweight fights. All four of these fights are actually lightweight fights. I'm just realizing now, which is crazy. But this is another really, really fun fight. Dustin Poirier most recently lost to Justin Gaethje via head kick in the BMFL title fight. So he's coming off a loss, and Benoit Saint-Denis, I think he's on something like a, let me check. Yeah, it's something like a 1-2-5 fight win streak, something like that.
Moises, Bonfim is in there.
Mm-hmm. Most recently knocked out Matt Frivola, head kick. It's super impressive stuff. This guy has been on a tear throughout the lightweight division, and he's looked fantastic while doing so. But Dustin Poirier is a huge litmus test for this lightweight division. I mean, if you could get past him, you are a bona fide lightweight contender, title contender, easily. So off the back of that, do you think that Benoit Saint-Denis can make this fight competitive and bring the pressure to Dustin Poirier?
There you go right there. Can he bring the fight to Dustin Poirier? That's always been the one thing about Benoit Saint-Denis that I did not like. It was his activity. Again, he's not a super big puncher. He's not dominant in the ground. Excuse me. His cardio. Let me stop talking. His cardio. I don't know. Like, he comes out super, super nice in the first and maybe even a couple of the second rounds. But then after that, he's not the best. I was pretty impressed with his fight against Thiago Moises, who I looked at as a guy who's really, really a gatekeeper in that division. Fought a lot of big guys and then just, like, never was really a star, but fought a lot of big guys. Benoit Saint-Denis beat him. I mean, judo, BJJ during the military and the French Special Forces. Like, this guy has, like, everything. It's just his pacing and his cardio. I don't know if Dustin Poirier is the fight that he wins. Dustin Poirier is, like, as good as complete as a fighter is in the lightweight division. I think he can make things interesting. I'm still going to go with Dustin Poirier, but Benoit Saint-Denis, if he shows enough, and I don't even think necessarily he needs to win, if he's able to make this an absolute banger, it could be like fight of the night even, hypothetically, then I think that he turns heads, and I think he will see he will see his name slotted in bigger events and bigger against bigger fighters in the future. I think if he makes an impression that he's here to stay in the lightweight division, which is super stacked, which is saying a lot. I really believe that he's a star in the making. I like him a lot. I do.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I mean, I think definitely a big performance could, you know, put him in those bigger slots at lightweight. I mean, it's so packed in that division. Yeah. It'll be tough for him. But, I mean, it kind of reminds me of Diego Lopez making that really competitive fight against Movsar Evloev and kind of, like, proving that he's a legitimate fighter in the featherweight division. And from there, we've seen what Diego Lopez has gone on to do, become a real legitimate contender, you know, in that division. which actually is a great segue to UFC 297, which is a fight night happening this Saturday. And Movsar Evloev is fighting in the main card opener against Arnold Allen. Should be a very, very fun fight. I'm really, really excited to see this one. Arnold Allen most recently lost to Max Holloway, I believe. Yeah. I think that was his most recent fight.
Really good fight, too.
Yeah, fantastic really good fight. Honestly, out of all of kind of Holloway's contender fights since he's lost the belt to Volkanovski and kind of bounced around the top of the featherweight
That's
division.
That's the toughest one. He dropped him in the fight.
Exactly. I think it's a real competitive fight. So off the back of that, do you have any picks? What's your kind of, you know, take for this fight? Are you excited to see it? Are you, you know, do you think it's a good opener? Just general takes.
I believe Arnold Allen one day would probably be the best in that division. I believe right now he's ranked number 4. I mean, even already right now, Arnold Allen has some big wins. I love his fighting style. Not scared. He's always walking forward, rarely walks back. I'm picking Arnold Allen. I like him a lot. I do. I don't have any regrets about that. I don't see no reason not to pick him. I really, really do. I love Arnold Allen.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a huge Arnold Allen guy also. I love how fast he starts fights. I mean, just like look at that Dan Hooker fight where he just kind of bum-rushed him
against
and finished
Hangman,
him.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it was so impressive. And also the Calvin Kattar fight too. Mm-hmm. Really, really impressive stuff.
Sadiq Yusuf he has on his roster.
Yeah.
On his win resume, like...
Yeah, he's built up quite a resume in this featherweight division, but I will say to that same extent, Movsar Evloev is a scary person. I mean, if you want to even remove the Diego Lopez fight out of the equation.
Which he won.
He did win that fight.
He did win that fight. He has an L on his record. He won that fight.
Yeah, 100%. He won that fight. I like, Diego Lopez might have been like the people's champ from that fight. He might have been the people's winner. But look at the scorecards. Movsar Evloev 100% won that fight. And off the back of that, 17-0. This guy's undefeated. He's really, really impressive. His grappling is unreal, honestly, at the featherweight division. I mean, we normally have to wait until we get to like lightweight and welterweight and even middleweight to really see these kind of dominating grapplers. But we see this guy at featherweight that's just able to really kind of just... I don't know, eliminate people from the kind of conversation, I guess, of just even like a contest. And mixed in some great submission abilities also. So honestly, off the back of that, I think it could be a really interesting fight if Evloev is able to get it to the ground and kind of stall out Allen, who is known to be such a fast starter. I'm interested to see what happens if he maybe lengthens that fight to the second, third round. Through grappling, if that will maybe slow down Allen,
yeah,
I think that definitely could, you know, be a path to victory for Evloev. But I think I'm leaning more towards Evloev in this fight, which is weird enough since I'm an Allen fan.
Yeah,
but Zach, I guess before we move on, do you got any quick pick? Sorry to put you on the spot. Got you. So, more so than anything, Zach's excited to see what Evloev can do and if he's, you know, like a real litmus test, if he'll be a legitimate contender or if it's just kind of like a paper record.
And he also has a win over Dan Ige. I didn't know that. Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. Impressive
Back
guy.
Back in 2022. Wow, that's an impressive. Okay.
Yeah. Moving on, though, we got another fight in this UFC 297 main card, and that is Chris Curtis. Action Man taking on Marc-Andre Barrial. There's one point in time where I remember that Marc-Andre Barrial was going to be like, he was saying like, oh, I'm going to be the next GSP. I'm going to be that good. I'm going to be, you know, like a new Canadian superstar. And looking at his record of 16-6, it definitely didn't pan out that way.
Yeah.
I hate to kind of be critical of the guy because he does genuinely seem like a really nice guy. But since he's kind of said that when he first got to the UFC, kind of got humbled a little bit, took a couple losses, worked on his style a bit, he's really kind of developed into this interesting fighter that's, you know, a true mixed martial artist. He's not a fantastic striker. He's not a fantastic clinch guy. He's not a fantastic grappling guy. But he's able to mix it together to a point where he's able to eke out wins. I mean, most recently over Eric Anders, also Julian Marquez, he was able to get a finish over, which Julian Marquez has one of my favorite nicknames in the UFC, the Cuban Missile Crisis. Very, very funny. Also asked out Miley Cyrus in a weird tangent. But anyway, despite that, yeah, we're going to move on from that. Marc-Andre Barrial has developed into a very interesting fighter, but Chris Curtis, as his nickname implies, Action Man, he brings the pain. And when he lands, it is incredibly powerful, and he could put guys out. And I mean, with that, he's also had some incredibly impressive performances. If you want to go to his win over Kelvin Gastelum, or actually, excuse me, he lost to Kelvin Gastelum, but that was a closer fight. I will say, though, his knockout over Joaquin Buckley, really impressive stuff.
Yeah, Joaquin Buckley is a highlight reel himself.
And yeah, exactly. And also, Rodolfo Vieira, who is a really scary Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt, has multiple accolades in that world. He was able to kind of negate those takedowns and really, you know, win that fight. And also on top of that, knocked out a guy like Phil Haas. So I think that Chris Curtis is definitely the more dangerous out of the two. I don't know if he'll 100% win this fight, but I'm leaning more towards him. Mati, who do you got in this fight?
Marc-Andre Barrault is on a two-fight win streak. Again, he has the win against Andres and Marquez. Again, as you said it, not one thing specifically sticks out about him, but he mixes in really, really well. And he's an MMA fighter in every sense of the word. He's an MMA guy, mixed martial arts. Chris Curtis is obviously the more talented fighter, the higher name in this. I don't know if the fight against Kelvin Gastelum is really reassuring to me. That's an L on your record against. And again, Kelvin Gastelum is a guy who, like, you remember, I want to say it was out the Contender Series or the Ultimate. I think it was the Ultimate Fighter. Uriah Hall was supposed to be the next big thing. Who beats him? Kelvin Gastelum. Israel Adesanya's running through the middleweight division. Who beats him? Who gives him the best fight that he's had up to that point?
Kelvin Gastelum.
So Kelvin Gastelum, in every sense of the word, is kind of like a gatekeeper. He's like a guy that's going to bang it out all the time. Never count him out. But still, if you're Chris Curtis, you got to win that fight. You got to win that fight. It has to be a W on your record. I'm going to lean towards Chris Curtis. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I wouldn't count out Barrault. I think he's really, really good, and I think riding a two-fight win streak, he could easily make it three, again, with his wide tool bag. It may not be necessarily deep, but it's very, very wide. And as he goes on with fights in the future, it will become deeper and deeper, but for right now, I'll give the slight edge to Curtis.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. Zach, quick pick. Always likes the action, man. He's going with Chris Curtis. Man. Good pick. moving on in this UFC 297 main card, we got a really fun fight. I'm excited for this one. It should be a good one, especially for an event that is happening in Toronto, Canada. We have somebody in Mike Malott, who is a really impressive fighter, 10-1, taking on Neil Magny, who is a mainstay of the welterweight division. Neil Magny has been kind of through everything at welterweight, from most recently fighting Ian Garry and kind of getting dominated to fighting guys like Lorenz Larkin and Phil Rowe. And I mean, he's really been around kind of everywhere in the welterweight division. I mean, if you look at his record, it goes all the way back to 2013 in the UFC, which is insanity. More than a decade at this point.
Jesus.
But he's taken on a young gun in Mike Malott, who most recently got a submission win over Adam Fugit and also a submission win over Johan Lennis, which kind of a tough name to pronounce, but both those finishes very, very impressive. So off the back of that, do you think that Mike Malott is going to continue to kind of, you know, put the welterweight division on notice in this fight against Neil Magny, or do you think he's going to kind of come up against some adversity and Neil Magny is going to give some pushback?
Magny could definitely have some pushback. Mike Mallett is currently, I don't want to say he's undefeated in the UFC, if I'm not mistaken.
I believe so.
1-2. I know he has a win against Mickey Gall in there. He's undefeated in the UFC. Young gun, I believe he's 4 years younger than Neil Magny. Magny at this point is 37. The Haitian sensation, as we call him. He's currently coming off a loss to Ian Garry. And Shavkat's in there. I know lost to Shavkat in there, as well as Gilbert Burns. Did he lose to Gilbert Burns?
Yep, he did.
He did lose to Gilbert Burns. So I don't know if that's convincing enough. I'm gonna stick with the obvious. Mike Mallett, I think, comes out with this. Again, Neil Magny kind of reminds me of one of those old men journeymen, kind of like a Jorge Masvidal, a ton of fights, just beat up and battered. But I think Mike Mallett comes in and just takes this one. I think this is more of a landslide.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think this fight's a bit harder for me to kind of give my pick on because, I mean, you do focus on, you know, Neil Magny's losses to guys like Shavkat and Gilbert Burns and Ian Garry, but those guys are, you know, some really respected and tough welterweight fighters. And also, I mean, he's eked out, you know, some, you know, pretty clever wins against guys like Jeff Neal and, you know, like I said, Phil Rowe and Daniel Rodriguez, you know, guys that also are really competitive. I mean, most specifically, Jeff Neal, he's no pushover in the welterweight division. And for Neil Magny to get a win against him, I think that that speaks volumes in this fight against Mike Mallett, because Mike Mallett, I mean, he is a really impressive fighter. I mean, just looking at his record, it's, you know, it's all wins pretty much in the past.
Yeah.
You know, since 2017, he's been undefeated. But despite that, though, I think that it could lead to him maybe starting out too quickly and possibly just, you know, falling into Neil Magny's kind of stalematey style, if that makes any sense, because we all know how much Neil Magny loves the clinch and kind of carrying out fights and drawing them out and kind of draining fighters against the cage before, you know, eventually bringing the fight to the ground and just kind of eking out rounds. And I think Mike Mallett, if he's too excited in this fight, pressures too much, goes against the cage too much, and really tries to pressure for that finish, I think that it could play into Neil Magny's style.
Okay.
But I will say I am also leaning towards Mike Mallett. I think that I want to see him win, honestly. I think that's definitely a bias. I think that it will probably be a more competitive fight than my just simple pick.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, I think Mike will definitely get the win. Zach, do you have a pick? He said Mike Mallett in Canada, about as free as it gets. You know, honestly, that is a good point. That is a good point. I will say, though, I'm just worried about the quick start. I don't know. Just something about Neil Magny. He is
guys
like,
with quick starts.
He's like the equivalent of like super glue in the welterweight division. He just slows you down and sticks to you. It's just like you can't get him free of you. It's just so, you know, I don't know. We'll see. Should be an interesting fight. That is the third to last fight in this UFC 297 main card. For the co-main event, we have a women's bantamweight title fight.
Ooh.
It is the vacant bantamweight title that will be fought for. Raquel Pennington versus Mayra Bueno Silva. Should be a very interesting fight. The most recent title holder of the bantamweight belt was Amanda Nunes before she retired and left Juliana Pena very upset without the possibility of that trilogy fight. Man. But now we have a new bantamweight fight or title fight. And it's one that I'm not super excited about, to be quite honest with you. I'm not the hugest Raquel Pennington fan or Mayra Bueno Silva. I think that Mayra Bueno Silva definitely is a bit more interesting of a fighter, a bit more young, has more intriguing of a style. But also, I know that Zach hates Mayra Bueno Silva.
Hates her.
Due to kind of this whole controversy with her last fight against Holly Holm, where it turns out that she was taking PEDs, got suspended, and then, weirdly, after a suspension, they were like, hey, we're going to punish you by giving you a title shot, which is extremely weird. I don't know why they did that, to be quite honest.
That being a white privilege.
Yeah, something like that. I don't know. They must see something in her, whether that's the style of her abilities behind the mic, even though I don't think that they're that crazy at all. But despite that, though, I think that this will be an interesting fight, and it's officially a new era in this bantamweight women's division. So off the back of that, Mahdi, do you have any picks? Do you see how this fight's going to play out? Are you excited for it at all?
I wasn't particularly excited. I actually like Raquel Pennington's style. She's a freestyle fighter, if I had to describe her. And she has wins against Aspen Lett. That's a good win. Holly Holm was a fight that she had. I like that fight a lot. It was back all the way. That's an older fight, but she lost that fight. But still, I mean, she's tried and true. Mayra Bueno Silva. I mean, Brazilian-American top team, Chitara. How do I feel about her? I don't know how I feel about her. I genuinely don't know. Again, with the PED use, again, like you said, I thought it was Adderall. I didn't know that it was actual PED. I thought it was like something completely, but apparently it is PED. She's enhancing her body. But to tell you the truth, I don't know how I feel about this particular fighter in the flyweight division. I don't know what to make of her just yet. I don't want to pick Raquel Pennington. I think Mayra Bueno Silva gets it done, actually. I just think she gets it done. I don't think Raquel Pennington, I don't know.
I would love Raquel Pennington to win the belt, especially since she's been fighting in the UFC since 2013, more than a decade. And if you want to go back to her last title fight, which was against Amanda Nunes, it was honestly one of the most heartbreaking title losses I've seen in a long time. I believe she retired in between the fourth and fifth round, and her that was the whole controversy. She tried to retire between the fourth and fifth round, or going into the championship rounds, but her coaches wouldn't let her, and then that led to Amanda Nunes just kind of beating her down. But yeah, it's just what Raquel Pennington has gone through in this whole bantamweight division, and just, you know, how long she's been around. And, you know, she might not have been the greatest fighter of all time, but she has stuck around and been a real competitive person. I want to see her get the win, but I think that Mayra Buena Silva is just special. I think she's just better.
I think she has something special. I could see the legitimacy as her as a star. Sorry, Zach. I'm so sorry. The preacher's daughter. I know the preacher's daughter is everything in New Mexico, but I do see the star potential in her. I mean, PED use, obviously you don't want that in the UFC, but I could see, like, it's not the first time that somebody's been on bad behavior and been awarded with a title fight, Conor McGregor. But
or John Jones.
John Jones. It's not the first time. I just don't think Raquel Pennington is just good enough. I don't think she has that special in her, to tell you the truth.
Exactly, and I think that's honestly why I'm not so excited for this fight, because it's just, I don't know. I feel like Mayra Buena Silva hasn't really proven that she is kind of a superstar in this bantamweight division or someone to really take notice of. And we know for a fact that, I mean, I hate to say it, that Raquel Pennington isn't, you know, a person that is the most exciting fighter, isn't going to be, you know, the next big thing in the bantamweight division. So I think both that kind of adds up to a fight that's like, you know, we'll see who wins, but it is what it is. I'm not really, like, you know, waiting for the second it turns on to watch it. But off the back of that, I do think that Mayra Buena Silva will get the win. Her finish over Holly Holm, no matter how controversial and, you know, it doesn't count anymore, whatever, it was still an impressive win. And yeah. I'm looking, like, literally directly right at Zach right now, trying to, like, justify it. I'm sorry. It was an impressive win despite everything. I'm sorry. And also, if you want to keep going back farther, I mean, her win over Lena Landsberg, I think that she just has more weapons in this fight than Raquel, honestly. But we'll see. We'll see. And also, I mean, this fight has a huge caveat of Juliana Pena is kind of waiting in the wings to, you know, take on whoever wins this belt, which will be, I mean, for better or worse, a lot more interesting of a fight, just because Juliana Pena loves to talk on Twitter and on the mic and just makes controversy. I think that that could be a definitely interesting fight, but I mean, we'll just have to see who is the winner on Saturday night and the new bantamweight women's champion. But moving on to this UFC 297 main event, I'm so excited. I cannot wait to talk about this one. We got Sean Strickland taking Andriques Duplessis. Sean Strickland most recently dominated Israel Adesanya over 5 rounds to claim the middleweight strap. Andriques Duplessis, I believe it was on the same card that actually happened. Andriques Duplessis knocked out Robert Whittaker to put himself in a contender spot and put himself in this UFC 297 main event. There's been a lot of controversy heading into this fight, with both guys kind of jawing at each other. They fought actually at the UFC, or at the last UFC pay-per-view before the year ended. And since then, it seems like things have kind of cooled down a little bit. But there were still kind of, you know, terms thrown around, DMs thrown around that I don't know if I really want to say on air, because they seem like, you know, a little too aggressive for the...
Nothing with Sean Strickland. None of his tweets.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, craziness. But anyway, though, removing all of the trash talk from this fight, I think stylistically, it's definitely a really interesting matchup. Sean Strickland, one of the better boxers at middleweight. His Philly shell style, really, really interesting. Mixes in with some good clinch work, some good, you know, opportunistic grappling. But he just puts pressure on people. Yeah. And he's really kind of able to win fights by just, like I said, putting the pressure on people, tallying up the strike marks, and just kind of destroying their will to fight, if that makes any sense. I mean, if you want to go back to kind of his earlier fights and like during COVID, like the UFC Apex days, I mean, you could really hear him talking to his opponents then and like kind of breaking them down. But that goes, you know, with the style.
That goes with the style.
But Andriques Duplessis on the other side has some crazy power behind him. And he, like I said before this podcast, he's the best worst fighter of all time. He seems so herky-jerky in his movements, and he seems like he gets tired so quickly. quickly, and it seems like he's inexperienced on the ground, but also amazing on the ground. He's one of the weirdest fighters I think I've ever seen in the past, you know, couple years. And he's really good, though. He's really, really good, really good, which really is good. Wild. So, Mahdi, I mean, obviously, I think we're both excited for this fight, but what do you see and what makes this intriguing for you?
I mean, we were all talking about this off camera. I think what this fight can really be described as, I don't know if Zach is going to agree with me or even you, Andrew, is battle of the weirdos, right? These are styles that are not like conventional or maybe even aesthetically pleasing per se. Sean is definitely the cleaner fighter of the two. But what both of these men do, before I give my pick, but what both of these men do perfectly is fight within themselves, right? It's a style that works for them. It's a style that they understand. And it's a style that, you know what, at the end of the day, gets them wins, which is the only thing that counts on the UFC. It's win or losses. And these guys are accumulating a lot and a lot of wins. Sean Strickland has the belt. And Driscus Duplessis has impressive wins over Bobby Knuckles. Me and you were talking about it, how Bobby was going to destroy him. Lo and behold, here comes Driscus Duplessis with the sloppiest style that you've ever seen. And he takes the win against one of the bigger names ever in the middleweight division. So both guys fight perfectly within themselves and they understand their own styles. Again, Sean Strickland with the mental breakdown of his fighter. I just think Sean Strickland's the better fighter. I think he's cleaner. Again, you see him talking about like how boxers always come up to him and ask him, hey, why didn't you box? Because his boxing style is very, very clean. The Philly shell is very, very nice looking. Driscus Duplessis fundamentally from the crust of fighting, from the fundamental, is just so bad. It's a big guy who's coming to knock people's head off, but he doesn't know how. He's just swinging. That's what it looks like to me. And again, Zach pointed out another great thing, which was his stamina. I argued that it was his nose thing because I understand there was something going on with his nose. He said he couldn't breathe. Zach convinced me that that probably, even if you get that fixed, that probably won't improve your cardio that much. Sean Strickland's holding the belt. I don't think Driscus Duplessis is the guy to take it away from him. Yay. And even if he does have a great equalizer, I don't think Driscus is going to be able to land it on a guy like Sean. Sean's cleaner. Sean's cleaner of the two.
Yeah, I would say that. And listen, I love the Philly shell style, and I think that it's fantastic for boxing. I just think that for MMA, it leaves you open for a couple other attacks that, you know, that Sean Strickland honestly just, I don't know if he just doesn't think about it or if he just kind of negates it in his brain because he's just like, I want to strike all the time. But, I mean, that Philly shell, when you put it up, one, it leaves you pretty open to head kicks because you have to bring up that whole other hand to really, you know, actually guard the, you know, head kick. And also on top of that, with your hands all up, it's kind of hard to also defend takedowns or if someone rushes you into a clinch.
Yeah.
It puts you in a very kind of narrow region of fighting, and it worked out for the Israel Adesanya fight because I think Israel Adesanya legitimately only wanted to strike. And
and that was perfect one, too. That was a very perfect, like Sean on the money.
Exactly, and I think that style worked perfectly for that fight. I think against Driscus Duplessis, I think he's going to have a lot more trouble because I think Driscus, as weird and, I don't know, just out there he is, I think he's going to throw some odd strikes. He's going to throw a couple head kicks. He'll throw in a couple takedown attempts. That'll kind of put Sean on the back foot, I feel like, and it might catch him off guard, whereas against Israel Adesanya, he kind of knew what was coming. I mean, as much as we want to say, you know, how Israel Adesanya is a Rubik's Cube and you can't figure out his striking, it's still striking at the end of the day, striking. You know, and with Driscus' ability just to mix in MMA, I don't know. I think that Driscus honestly has a good chance in this fight. But one other thing I want to bring up is Sean Strickland's most recent loss was actually to Alex Pereira getting knocked out with that, you know, famous left hook.
Yeah, the famous left hook. Exactly. Sean didn't look ready for that fight, to tell you the truth. I mean, I don't know if he was feeling the range. Like, he was just walking in front of it. He didn't even have his hands up. And he just allowed Alex.
So the question I'm going to ask is, I kind of asked this before to pod, but I'll, you know, restate the question. Do you think that Driscus can land the same, you know, amount of power, or can land with the same amount of power that Alex Pereira did, and not necessarily put Sean Strickland out cold? I don't think Driscus honestly has the power to do that, but at least put him on the back foot, maybe win a round, and honestly win his way back into that fight and kind of make it a bit more competitive.
I mean, absolutely, because he's not, okay, Driscus is not Alex Pereira. Alex Pereira might be legitimately the third biggest puncher on the world. And Ganu Wilder, I'm willing to put my money that Pereira's third. Like, Pereira hits super hard. Dricus is a hard hitter. He's a strong guy. You see the frame. Mm-hmm. I think he could make things uncomfortable for Sean. I think Sean is too stiff. You see the awkward foot. It's like this old school traditional boxing style. And Dricus is very, very loose. He's really out there. He's willing to try everything. Dricus, if he hits the guy, he's going to make things uncomfortable. Maybe he takes Sean out of his element because Sean is used to being the big, bad bully mentally and physically. But a guy like Dricus could take you out of your comfort zone and make this a kerfluffle, if I will, because, again, this is a battle of the weirdos. So I could definitely see that. I'm still going to lean towards Sean. I think Sean is going to be able to keep his distance and just employ his style. I don't think – if Dricus is not able to make things uncomfortable, I think he loses. Mm-hmm. I think he loses the fight.
Yeah, one last thing I was actually thinking of. It happened, like, probably a couple months ago. I believe it was during – let me check, actually. Yeah, it was during Jordan Levitt's last fight back in November, and I remember just looking at the pre-fight interviews, and Levitt was essentially just talking about how he trains with Sean Strickland and how he was, like, impressed to see him become champion and, you know, all the stuff. But what a lot of people don't realize with Sean Strickland was that he was actually out of the UFC for a couple years due to a severe motorcycle accident that he had. I believe it was a pretty severe accident, almost killed him, which makes his story of coming back and becoming UFC champion all more impressive. But the reason I'm bringing this up, though, is that Jordan Levitt is a close training partner of Sean Strickland, or at least in the same camp. And when he was talking about him, it seemed like as he was kind of talking about his injuries and kind of, you know, why that made it more impressive for him to be a champion, he was kind of edging on edging up to saying that he pretty much only has one good knee left. But he kind of stopped himself from saying that fully. And I was thinking about that, and I was like, it kind of makes sense why you wouldn't want to say that just in a, you know, in a straight up interview so that pretty much the rest of the middleweight division can see that. But I think him not saying that honestly just proves that Sean Strickland's legs might not all be there. And I mean, you want to kind of look at injuries and how it affects a fighter. We can look at somebody like Kamaru Usman, who has had some real trouble in his past couple fights. Working his wrestling. So I think that if Dricus maybe works in some wrestling, we haven't really seen Sean grapple that much in his past couple fights. That could be an avenue to victory.
Do you think Dricus is technically sound enough to attack that point? Do you think he'll be able to, like,
I don't know.
To doubt his ability, but do you think he'll be able to, like, cleanly, like, okay, I'm going to attack this left knee. This is what I'm going to do. I don't think he's.
As sloppy as it was and how tired they both were, he was able to out-wrestle Derek Brunson.
Hell yeah,
you know?
He got here.
Yeah, he was able to out-wrestle somebody like Derek Brunson. I think that that's definitely a tool in the bag that he can use. And considering what Sean Strickland has been through, predominantly that motorcycle accident, I don't think that's a bad thing to, you know, kind of attack.
Yeah.
I mean, like Chris Weidman most recently broke his leg into. His first fight back was against Brad Tavares. Tavares said, I'm going to kick him as hard as I can in that leg. So I think Dricus du Plessis needs to do the same thing, to be quite honest with you.
Kick him as hard as you can, Dricus.
Yeah, honestly. But, Zach, before we kind of depart for this episode, do you have a pick? Got you. Zach is going with Strickland. He said it's a question of if Dricus du Plessis can land, but he doesn't think that he can. He's going with Strickland, which honestly, I think it is if du Plessis can land one of those big strikes, and I think that that herky-jerky style honestly can. I think that will allow for a semi-big moment, and if he works in some grappling there, which I think Sean Strickland might not be the best at, whether that's technique-wise or physicality-wise, I think that he could win this fight. You're going with Sean Strickland, though, Marty?
I'm going to have to keep it with Sean Strickland. I think he fends off Dricus du Plessis. I do.
Gotcha. We'll see. I mean, who knows? Maybe the best worst fighter of all time is our new UFC middleweight champion this time next week. We shall see.
He gets it done. I'm going to lose my...
Yeah, I know. It's been a weird last year for MMA. I don't want to start 2024 off the wrong way.
Lightweight champ, it's going to happen. It's going to happen, Andrew.
We'll see. But I think that just about wraps up this episode of Pound for Pound. Make sure to check out UFC 297 tomorrow night and our breakdown of the results next week. Before I go, I want to give a huge thanks to my always great co-host, Mahdi Dembele, for taking time out of his busy syllabus week to talk some cage. Also, huge shout out to our producer, Zach Cordova, this week, killing it on the sticks, giving us our great picks. I've been Andrew Canary, and Pound for Bound is a production of WFUV Sports.